Awesome. Well, folks, today we're going to wrap up our Now is the Time worship series. But before we do that, Angie mentioned during the announcements that next week we start a new series, and it's called Reclaimed, Resetting the Table. We're going to talk about reclaiming the table, and there are two reasons I'm really excited about this series. Number one, I don't know about how things are at your house, but around our house, we have found that it's less and less often we gather as a family around our table. We eat more and more meals on the run, and our table, at least at our house, has become a place where mail stacks up, and we do homework there, but we don't as often gather for meals around the table. And I think that's true for many of us. The second reason I'm really excited about this series is I ran across this quote the other day. It's from a guy named Leonard Sweet. He's just a brilliant author. And he wrote these words: Christianity was built around tables, not pulpits or altars or books, tables and food. And so we're going to explore the Christian story, because at the heart of the story of the first church was a lot of tables and a lot of food fellowship. And so we're going to dive into that over the next month. So invite a friend to come and be a part of that. Today we're going to wrap up our series, Now is the Time. And before I do that, I just have to tell you, if you weren't here last Sunday to hear Angie give her first message, I want you to go home after church, go on your computer, and pull it up on our website. It was beautiful. She talked about how in our lives sometimes we get stuck. We get stuck by looking in the mirror, and all we can see in the mirror is how we are lacking. But we have a God who says, now is the time to see yourself in a totally different way. And she left us with this beautiful quote. She said, you lack nothing. And because you lack nothing, you have so much to give. Would you go home if you weren't here last week and just watch it? It's just beautiful. So thank you, Angie, for that. All right, so we're going to wrap up this series. Now is the time. And I'm going to start with a question that may make some of you uncomfortable, especially if you are Scandinavian or Stoic German. You might get a little sweaty. The question is this: how is your love life? Awkward, huh? I'm going to make it even more awkward, because I'm going to say this. I believe this is a question, if you consider yourself a Christian, I believe this is a question we should be asking one another on a weekly, daily basis. Gets even more awkward, huh? See, here's the deal, folks. We, as people of faith, we claim that we follow a God who just doesn't claim to love people. We follow a God who claims to be love. You see, God doesn't claim to just love you. God claims that God is love. You see, here's the thing. In the book of John, we hear these words. John writes, dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. Like, the very being of God is love. And this passage seems to suggest that to know love is to know God, and to know God is to know love. I mean, if you don't know love, then you don't know God. And so here's my question to you: how is your love life? How's your love life? There's a story about a guy named Moses in the Bible. If you're familiar with the church, you've likely heard of Moses. And here's what I believe. When I read the stories of the Old Testament, I don't think there was anyone who knew God better than Moses. God appeared to Moses in a burning bush. God used Moses. God and Moses led God's people out of Egypt. God parted the sea for Moses. God came with Moses and protected him and all the Israelites through the wilderness. God led Moses up this mountain and appeared in a cloud of smoke and gave Moses the Ten Commandments. If there was someone who should have known who God was, it was Moses. But here's the thing, on top of this mountain, after all of that has happened, Moses does a really weird thing. He turns to God and he asks God to do something that seems strange given the fact that Moses knows God so well. It says this in the book of Exodus. Then Moses, on top of this mountain, said, "Now show me your glory. Now show me your glory, God." Here's the thing. That word glory is a Hebrew word, and it looks like this. Kavodeka. Can you say that? Kavodeka. It's a Hebrew word that means essence or being. And so when Moses was saying to God, "God, I want to know who you are. Would you show me your essence? Would you show me what you're made of? Will you show me what makes you, you?" And what's funny is God looks at Moses and said, "Moses, I can't do that. Because if I were to show you all of who I am, it would literally blow your mind." I kind of like to think that Moses, or God sent Moses a text message, and all it was this emoji. Right? God said, "I can't do that. You can't handle my essence." And so God comes up with this weird plan. He says, "Moses, I want you to go in this little cave, and I'm going to pass by, and I'm going to cover your eyes because you can't see me, but I'm going to reveal all of who I am, my glory to you." And it says Moses did as God said. He went to the cave, and God passed in front of Moses. And in that moment, while Moses was in the cave, God said, "The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love." The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. God doesn't just love. God is love. And so to know love is to know God, and to know God is to know love. And if you don't know love, you don't know God. So here's my question for today. How is your love life? How's your love life? We know, all of us, that love can be really wonderful, but love can also be hard. And there are all kinds of artists that have written songs about love. For example, Whitney Houston wrote, "I will always love you," right? And I think of this song, and I think of when I was in high school, and I'd be at the dance, you know, the homecoming dance, dancing with this girl that I thought, "This is the one. I'm in love." And then a few months later at prom, I was dancing with a different girl. I thought, "This is the one. I'm in love," right? There are other songs the Beatles sang about love. "All you need is love," right? It's sort of anything. You can do anything if all you have is love, right? And we get kind of cynical about that because love's not that easy, right? And then there's Michael Bolton. He sings, "When a man loves a woman." That song, I don't know why, it makes me think of the night I first kissed my wife. My father-in-law is here, so I shouldn't talk about this. But I was so nervous, like, I thought I was going to vomit. Like, my heart was pumping out of my chest. Tina Turner sings about love. "What's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion," right? She knew that love can be crummy, it can be terrible, it can be a drag. So here's my question. How's your love life? You see, here's the thing. I think we make love really complicated. And I don't think love really is that complicated. We make it complicated. And it starts when we're little kids. I had my son make one of these. Did you ever make these when you were a kid? Anybody? When I was a kid, we made these and we called them fortune tellers. And what you do is you put numbers on the top. And then on the inside, you'd put... at least guys did this. We put cars, like the cars we wanted. And then you'd flip it open and you'd put the name of girls in your class. And so what you'd do is you'd pick a number and you'd go 1, 2, 3, 4. And then you'd say, "Well, you're going to have 4 kids one day." And then you pick a car, and I'd always pick the Lamborghini. And then you'd flip it open and it was like, "Oh, you're going to have 4 kids. You're going to have a Lamborghini, but you're going to be married to Susie," right? That was how we did it. And then we graduated from that, and in middle school, we would pass notes in class. Remember those notes? Do you like me? Check one for yes, check two for no. And then in high school, we got more sophisticated. We'd ask our friend to ask our friend to ask a friend who knew the cute blonde girl whether or not they liked us. You see, we make love, I think, really complicated at a young age. And so it's no wonder that as adults, we make love complicated. And I'm not just talking about relationships. Think about it. When someone is hungry, we know there are people in our town even who are hungry. We don't just love them and give them food. We have to set up a program because we want to make sure nobody cheats the system. And when people are poor, we don't just love them and help them. We've got these voices in the back of our head that say, I wonder if they're just lazy. I wonder if they do drugs. I mean, something's got to be wrong with them. You see, here's the thing. How's your love life? You see, here's what I think. I think God sent his son into this world to help us answer that very question. Because God knew that for many of us, me included, sometimes it's hard to love those who are different from us. Those who believe different things than I do. Those whose lives look different than my life. My grandma passed away a few years ago, and I loved my grandma, favorite person on this planet. We'd get together with grandma, and she had a whole mess of grandkids, and we loved to sit around with grandma and tell her what was going on in our life. And most of the time, she was upbeat, and she loved to hear what was going on. But we knew at times, when we told her certain things about her life, that she didn't necessarily agree with what we were doing. Because she had a phrase that she would say. She would say this, "Well, that's different." Anybody have a grandma like mine? You see, here's the thing. I think God knew that we struggle with people and things that are different from us. And so God sent God's son into this world. When I was 10 years old, 1984, a movie came out that got this knobby-kneed, awkward kid on the dance floor. Anyone remember when the movie Footloose came out? Remember that movie? Kevin Bacon, he was so cool. He played this guy, Ren McCormick, who moved from Chicago to this little tiny small town. And when he got to this small town, he realized something, that there was a law in that town against, of all things, dancing. And so he made it his mission to overturn this law, this prohibition on dancing. Well, there was a man in town who was the leader of these people who thought we shouldn't be dancing, and that was the minister in town. And along the way, Ren fell in love with the minister's daughter. Dun, 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 right? And here's the thing, like many pastor's kids, she had a little bit of a wild side because she liked to dance. She didn't agree with her dad's stance. And so the whole movie, if you've seen it, you know there's this tension between dad and daughter. But there's one night when she gets home late at night, her dad is waiting up for her, and there's this tension. But in a moment of vulnerability, Ariel says to her dad these words, "Daddy, I don't know that I believe everything you believe in, but I'll always believe in you. Daddy, I don't know that I believe everything you believe in, but I'll always believe in you. I don't know about you, but that's the kind of love I want in my life. A love that says you don't have to be like me. You don't have to do what I do. You don't have to act like I do. You can be you as you are, and I will still believe in you. I will still love you." You see, I think that's a little taste of the love that God wanted when God sent God's son into this world. You see, back in that ancient world, the religious life of God's people was all about sameness. It was all about rules. It was all about order. It was all about conforming your life to the 613 laws of the Hebrew scriptures. It was all about following the Ten Commandments so that your life looked like everyone else's life. It was creating a homogeneous community. The covenant, the old covenant God had with God's people was, "You do this and I will do that for you." And sometimes I think for all of us, some of that old covenant stuff seeps into our understanding of love. If you've ever been to a wedding, one of the favorite quoted phrases at a wedding is, "And two shall become one." It's like when you get married, if you're really in love, you should lose your individuality and become sort of this homogenous two, one. There's this other, if you're looking to fall in love, you go out to a website. It's called match.com. Think about that. Match. We've got to match you up so you're similar. You see, that's this old kind of thinking that love is based on likeness. Well, I believe God came and blew that out of the water in Jesus. In fact, Jesus was having a conversation with some of the religious academic types of the day. And they said, "Jesus, we want you to go deep. We want you to give us some long drawn out theological answer. Here's the question, Jesus. Of all the laws, all the rules, which is the most important?" And the answer Jesus gives to that question is almost like a Sunday school answer. He looks at them and he says this. He says, "Well, love." He says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind." And then he says, "And love your neighbor as yourself." And I imagine it sort of blew them away. What do you mean, Jesus? It can't be that simple. There's another story where Jesus goes to the home of a guy named Lazarus. He's raised Lazarus from the dead, and so they want to invite him over to their house to thank them. And so he and his sisters, Mary and Martha, they invite him over, and the disciples must have been invited as well because Judas shows up on the scene. And the story goes like this. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took out a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she, help me here, poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. Could you imagine? And the house was filled with this fragrance of the perfume. But then one of the disciples, listen to this, Judas, who was later to betray him, he objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. And then Jesus said, what?
Leave her alone.
It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You see, Mary is in love with Jesus. She does these wild, ridiculous things that don't make any sense. For example, men, when you were in love, do you remember when that significant other said to you, "Honey, you don't have anything going on today. How about we go shopping?" And inside you said, "That is a terrible idea." But you went with because you were in love. Or women, when you were in love with your husband, he said, "You know, it's duck season. How about you come duck hunting with me?" And inside you thought that was a horrible idea. But you went and you froze your tail off for a whole day out in the slough. We do crazy things for love. Some have suggested that nard, that perfume that she poured out on Jesus' feet, was actually perfume that she had purchased at a very high price and was saving for her wedding day. And so what she was doing is pouring out any chance of her ever being married. She had no plan B, and she did it. Why? Because she was in love. You get that perspective, right? Of love. She's just madly in love. But we also get a different posture to love as well. And that's the posture of Judas. Judas, who says, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. We don't do things that way." Judas, who says, "No, no, 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 we got to follow the rules. We got to do things the right way." Judas, whose love is a little bit detached. It's about doing what's right versus what's wrong. You see, I believe Jesus came into this world to blow away that love that Judas sort of shows us. You see, I think Jesus came into this world and wanted to make sure that this world is a world filled with people who are just going to love this, a world filled with Marys. So here's my question for you again. How is your love life? How's your love life? About four blocks from the house I owned in Fargo, North Dakota, there was a Baskin Robbins. And I have an addiction to ice cream, so this was a beautiful thing. How many flavors of ice cream does Baskin Robbins have? 31, right? And sometimes, this is how my brain works, it's a little weird. Sometimes I'd think, you know, if Baskin Robbins only sold one flavor of ice cream, do you think people would still ask for samples? Yeah. But I was thinking about that, 31 flavors. You see, I think if Jesus were a connoisseur of ice cream and Baskin Robbins only sold one flavor, Jesus would go on to the next store and skip that one. Because for Jesus wasn't into sameness. He wasn't into creating a homogenous community. Around our house, we love the movie Star Wars. Any Star Wars fans? We love the movie Star Wars. And here's my question for you. It's not a trick question. When you think of the movie Star Wars, who's the bad guy in Star Wars? Who's the bad guy? Darth Vader, right? Darth Vader. At least Darth Vader is who the bad guy is for people like me who grew up watching the first three movies. Right? Darth Vader was always after Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. He was the bad guy. But I've come to realize something. When I talk to my boys who are much younger than me, who grew up watching the other movies, the new movies, the prequel movies, they've learned about this guy named Anakin who would later become Darth Vader. And he's this cute little boy who grows up to be an adult. And for them, Anakin is a good guy. And actually, the whole Darth Vader thing is just sort of a blip on the radar screen. We all make mistakes in life. And I love that because for me, isn't that what God does with us? Like Jesus came into this world to make bad guys good guys and to make good guys bad guys sometimes. God came into this world so that when we look in the mirror and all we see is the dark side, we would know that we're the hero of God's story. Folks, as we close today, how is your love life? Now, I can see on the looks of your face, some of you are going, okay, enough about this love stuff. Pastor, we get it. Jesus is love. Blah, 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 blah. Why all this love stuff? Well, here's the deal. Today is Commitment Sunday. And for many weeks, we've been talking about this now is the time business. And today's Commitment Sunday, and many of you have made incredibly generous gifts to this project. And I want to say a big thank you to you. As we build this building, here's something you need to know, though. This building actually isn't about a building. This project isn't about a building at all. This project is all about love. And I know that sounds small, and I know that sounds trite, but it's true. You see, this project is about us being a church that when we sing all are welcome, we really mean all are welcome. It's about being a church that says, hey, we want you to be a part of our family of faith, and we're not going to make you conform to anything to be a part of our family of faith. It's about a community that says we're gonna give of our own resources to build space, to make space for people who are going to come that we don't even know yet. You see, that sort of love is at the heart of this church. I know that. Because there are many of you who have been here since the day you were born. You've been coming to this church since you were born. And there are others of you that never went to church until you stepped foot in this church. There are some of you who are here who through worship, I see you. You sit and you don't really get into singing. You just sit there and you're taking it all in. And that's what worship is to you. But here's what I also know. At the next service, there are going to be kids bouncing off the walls sitting in your same seat. I know there are some of you, real worship for you is sitting while singing stand up for Jesus. Think about that one. And then there are others of us in this family of faith for whom real worship is standing with hands in the air. I mean, here at Calvary, we baptize infants, we baptize adults. You see, that's what it means to be a church. It's that kind of love that doesn't say we all have to be the same. It's about creating space for all, whoever they might be. Folks, to know love is to know God. And to know God is to know love. And you don't know God unless you know love. So I'm going to close. And here's my question. How's your love life? Let's pray. Gracious God, I give thanks. I give thanks for this incredible family of faith that we share here at Calvary. And God, you know how hard it is for us to love sometimes. It's a really hard thing. It can be complicated. But God, you came into this world and you said, you know, all those rules, all those regulations, all that conformity, just do away with that. Just love. Just love your neighbor and love me. And so God, help us to be that church. God, I couldn't be more grateful for this family of faith that when we sing all are welcome, we really mean it. We really mean it. And so we give thanks for this. Bless what we're trying to do here at this church and bless this project as we move forward, striving to follow your will. God, we pray this in your name. And all God's people said,
amen. Amen.